Time now, 8:14. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now on the phone, Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Leslie.
Well, let's talk. Start with just this so-called phantom building near New Park Hotel. Is it in or is it out as part of this Kimball Junction neighborhood master plan?
Well, I think it's out. I mean, the basics of the proposed amendment to the Kimball Junction general plan said that consideration should be given to amending development agreements. The issue is that all the density in the New Park development agreement has been spent, other than like 100, 200, 300 square feet, some small number. And so the likelihood of new density being created there through an amendment of the development agreement is slim and none. I don't see any reason to show it. It's created a firestorm of criticism over something that's, you know, really not going to happen, and it just distracts from the bigger vision of what we're trying to accomplish there.
Okay, so I think I heard you say, because you started the sentence by saying, I think it's out, but...
Well, we haven't approved anything yet, but I would be very surprised if there's a box there showing a proposed building. There's no density left in that development agreement to expand there. So in order for a new building to be built there, council would have to be persuaded to amend the development agreement for New Park and add density, and I don't see that happening.
Okay. And just in terms of the plan as presented, I mean, what do you see as the problems and the opportunities here?
Well, I think that the opportunity is it's a great vision of focusing on pedestrians and cyclists and people and not having it be so vehicle-centric. The challenge is implementing it, because it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of code amendment in order to create the right tools and things. I think it's very exciting, but it's also somewhat daunting. But if you don't start with a plan and have a vision, you get nowhere, and you get more of the reactionary approach and piecemeal development. So I generally like the plan very much, but I'm daunted by the next steps.
And what are those next steps?
Well, I mean, the immediate next steps are to have a lot of public outreach and hearings and refine the plan and ultimately adopt some version of it, perhaps what's been presented or some modification. Then the next steps after that, the plan itself calls for a lot of key action plans, I think is what they're called, and they have to do with, possibly creating new zones I don't have it in front of me, but a lot of one-sentence bullet points that are pregnant with a lot of work, and which is, we're not shying away from. It's just to realize it is going to take a lot of effort.
Okay, let's see. You were visited by Senator Romney's representatives, basically a visit for them just to say hello. Can the senator help out with a national resource and conservation designation for the Central Wasatch Commission?
Yes. I mean, he would likely be a Senate sponsor. The legislation has some challenges right now, and so it's not ripe. But when it becomes so, I think he'll be a strong ally. He co-sponsored the other large federal lands package that passed the Congress and has been signed into law that created the Emery County, that included the Emery County Public Lands Management Act, which was a huge deal, created a lot of wilderness, and the San Rafael Special Recreation Area, or National Recreation Area. And so I think he has inclination to be involved in such efforts, and I would suspect he would be a good ally. His senior senator, you know, Senator Lee, on the other hand, voted against that previous package, and he's not as friendly, but I think Senator Romney will be.
The Weber River issue between Hennifer and Taggart, in effect, what you heard is that that section of river isn't just crowded, but on the busiest days, it becomes animal house on the river. So what do we do about it, or anything?
Well, it's the tragedy of straddling, you know, two counties and kind of disjointed ownership and control, but we need to do we need to get it under control. I mean, it sounds like it's a real hazard, both to humans and the environment, the way it's, you know, taking place now. And we're going to focus on it jointly with Morgan County and with the state parks and others to rein it in. I mean, we need to. It sounded to me like, you know, Morgan's in the unenviable position of being on the tail end, so whatever, you know, that kind of garbage in, garbage out, if we allow the garbage in at the front end, which we control in Summit County, then the garbage is in the system, and it's going to, you know, there's no way, once it gets in, it's got to come out. And by garbage, I'm speaking literally and figuratively, I mean, there's a lot of trash because they complain that people come with improper flotation devices, floating styrofoam coolers, single-use beverage dispensers, mostly alcoholic, and, you know, flip-flops and things. And they get in, they put in Summit County. There's no regulation. You know, we're not there, no rules. They do whatever they want. And then once they get in the river, they realize that it's, you know, maybe a little more challenging, and they lose a lot of their personal things, so they just chuck them, and then they get out in Morgan County, and all this detritus winds up floating down the river, and then there's, you know, a lot of intoxication and other, you know, undesirable activity, and so yeah, we're gonna focus on it. It shouldn't be happening, and it's a great resource, and it's a lot of fun. I've done it.
Yeah,
it's something that we don't want to discouraged, but it needs to be more regulated.
So do you expect to see some changes implemented this year?
We would like to. You know, the bigger picture is we need a resource management plan, and that's not going to happen in a month. I mean, the season is upon us, right? I mean, they're going to be, from here on out, it's going to be used for the next 5 months.
Yeah. Let's see. The mental health contract, the council didn't take a vote on it, instead holding a special meeting today, 5 o'clock at the Richens building. Is this because the decision wasn't noticed yesterday, or do you need more clarification?
The former, because we didn't put it on our agenda as a possible decision, we have to re-agenda it. And we had the minimum notice period is 24 hours, so we quickly, it was like 4:30 yesterday when we decided that we had poorly advertised or poorly agended it, and so we put it on for 24 hours later. So we will make I anticipate a quick meeting tonight.
The recommended choice is the University of Utah operation. Is that something you're in favor of?
Yes. I think that we had a good process of this committee and their justifications. I mean, first of all, both Optum and U of U are great choices. It's a matter of, you know, choosing among two great choices. I think that the U of U being a nonprofit, being willing to contribute some of its own monies to expand our Medicaid reach, it's using a preponderance of local providers or those that are already providing services here, and a lot of other reasons makes them rise to the top, and we look forward to having them. We think it's going to be a great thing for the clients of those services.
And how do the funding mechanics work here? I mean, even you said it's confusing.
Yeah, it. I don't know if I can totally summarize it, but I think the way it works is 70% of the money comes from the federal government through Medicaid. And then the remaining 30% is paid for 80% by the state and 20% by the county. And that's the basics. So, and then how it actually gets paid gets more convoluted as to, you know, who actually gets that money and how and pays it to the service providers. I can't pretend to explain that to you, but there are those that work with it every day that can. But it's basically that 80, or that 30-70 split, and then so we're paying you know about 6% if my math is correct, 20% of 30%. And the rest is paid for, which would leave the state with 24% and the feds with 70%.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention from yesterday's meeting?
No, I think you've covered the high points.
Okay. Chris, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Have a good day.
And Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time, now 8:26. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, next week, Tuesday, April 30th, the Park City School District hosting a community forum and is very interested in what the community has to say about the options that were presented earlier this month by the MASTE Planning Consultants. In the studio with a preview of those options and where we go from here, I have the Superintendent of Schools, Jill Gilday. Good morning.
Hello.
So we've got four options, A through D. It looked like at the meeting where these were rolled out that the consultants were focused on just options A and B, and really just A at that meeting. Following the steering committee meeting the day after those options were presented, it sounds like the committee believes that option D also a viable option. So are we still looking at all four options at this point?
I think we do. I think these are the couple of weeks where we have some chance to really gain some insights, get some ideas from people, and think, you know, in the box and then think a little bit out of the box. So I think what ABCD provides for us are some different ways to look at the future of schooling and what the facilities might actually end up being to provide that next generation education.
Yeah, so I know it's without the graphic, it's not easy to explain, but can you kind of run through what these various options would do?
Absolutely. So, and we will be talking about this at the forum. So this is another great reason to kind of pop in if you have any time available, 6 o'clock on April 30th over at the high school. So we will look, we'll actually even talk a little bit about maybe the pluses and minuses of each option right there, right from the consultant's lens, those consultants who have studied the facilities, the current condition of the facilities, who have listened for this whole school year to a number of stakeholders. So what they have come up with the four, to give a quick summary, option A would remain K-5 schools, which is what you see now, our four elementaries, a middle school, and a high school configuration. And then option B actually shifts to a K-6 elementary system with a 7-8 middle school, which would probably be called, you know, Ecker or Treasure Mountain, and then or even both, right? And then a high school configuration. The third option is the one that looks at that out-of-the-box situation. What if every school were K-8? And then the fourth is a removing the fifth grade out of the elementary system and putting them in more of an intermediate school, which we even see, you know, throughout Utah and the county. It's called an intermediate program of education, which would be your middle grades years. So your 5-8 concept, whether that was two buildings or one building, would give you the chance of having, you know, your elementary early literacy, early numeracy years, then your application project-based learning years in the middle grades, and then your high school experience. So really, in looking at the K-8 system, that kind of gives you the breakdown of ABCD. We also have that for preschool as well as high school.
So all of the options have 9th through 12th grade at a high school, or two.
Correct. Correct. So there are the presentation was much longer than what we were actually able to demonstrate in the board meeting because we knew it would go on for hours and hours and hours, because under each of these options, you have decision trees. So once we have a pathway, A, B, C, or D, for actually pre-K-12, once we have a pathway that we've defined, then we probably as a community have somewhere between 70 and 80 decisions underneath that. So it's a long process. You know, we want to give it the time to have the good consideration, but what might seem like a big milestone is really just another step in the journey.
Yeah. In the graphics that were presented by the master planners, I mean, the A and B basically tied in terms of some scoring. I'm not sure who did that scoring. C was down there. D was also with a low rating. But what I'm hearing from steering committee members is that they were surprised that it was scored down so low, and they were kind of surprised who did that.
Right. So obviously we hire experts to do some of this work. And remember, there are a lot of features that go into the backside of the master plan. So three deliverables for the plan, a capital outlay outline for us for the next 10 years. So if everything stayed exactly the same, when are the boilers or furnaces coming up for renewal? When do the roofs need to be replaced? And again, you always do an annual assessment of that, but boy, it really helps with planning so that we can kind of look at big projects ahead. You can always defer something, but this way at least we know what we're looking at in current state. We then have educational specifications. That's a huge document that looks at all of the work from the Master Planning Committee, all of the community insights and input, and what do we want as a Park City community, our schools to look like, feel like? What should a classroom size be so that when we get to a design stage, we can actually hand that to an architect and start from something that we know has concurrence? There's a difference between an 800 square foot classroom, 900 and 1200 square feet. We should probably know and have a standard. So that's what that sets. And then the third is this pathway, right? The part that's so important. So lots of different options. So what has happened with the scoring? And I took me a few times to hear this to really understand it, is there are 22 criteria, and each of these options is scored and weighed against each of the criteria. So we were only looking at one. We were looking at just the grade alignment feature. So of the grade alignment, we have certain criteria that the task forces helped to inform. Task forces came together and said, these are the important things about grade alignment. We want to minimize transitions. So you can see then where a K-8 option might surface. If we want to minimize transitions, this makes sense. That would probably score high in that area. But would that also score high in transportation, location, inclusivity, diversity? Probably not. It'll probably score lower if we stay in our own little neighborhoods until ninth grade. So these are the considerations, and this is why it's quite complex. So we'll want to look at many parts of that scoring matrix, not just one. We just showed an example of one.
So I know that steering committee members are also concerned about some of the growth numbers that are being presented. Are these numbers, are they realistic, or are we building for open enrollment? Because that's what I keep hearing come up. It's like, why are we building bigger than, and now we're going to have to accept students out of district?
Right. We wouldn't likely not be building bigger. That would probably not be the fiscally responsible decision. However, we asked the master plan team to think about 10 years. So they're obviously going to project out. What does this cohort of learners look like? And then how do we go forward? Open enrollment, we have very few number of students who are attritioning or matriculating out of the system. It's a de minimis number. So that is not really a feature. But what I wonder about, being a new superintendent and new community member here, are what if a private school were to close? What if the charter didn't gain as many students as it has in the past? Would we have room for our own children who are in those other sites? So I think we do have to really think about that. What if there was a big workforce housing development that did have children? Have we planned for that? You know, so we always have some unknowns in any demographic study, and I think we all know that, and that's why we do them fairly frequently.
And then when are we going to start hearing about the things that that we spent several months on developing, the ideas of outdoor learning, classrooms where kids can learn together, hands-on learning? When does all of this start being part of the options?
Right, it is. It's part of the educational specification. So it becomes in that guiding document that any kind of future design or planning includes. However, as we look at curriculum instruction assessment, we're looking at those things as a system anyway. Right, so how do we use the outdoors? It's really quite incredible right now. If you've ever driven by and seen Treasure Mountain's PE courses, you know, they're really quite amazing. if you looked at Learning Academy this winter, had a chance to go skiing based on grants and nonprofit support. So really quite incredible things that we do.
Yeah, but does that get part done? I mean, doesn't that have to be incorporated into the master plan?
It is as part of those educational specifications. And then we will also see, you know, looking at where our schools all are, looking at the habitat around those schools, right? Looking at the creek that runs behind Jeremy Ranch, you know, can we do some water testing? Can we do some environmental awareness field trips there for our schools? Things like that all become part of this.
What we heard from the consultants is that we, the community, have to decide what we do with the high school first. So that's where we're going from here, because right. Then that just kind of waterfalls down to everything else.
Right. I think there are many pathways to success for a successful plan, but I do think there are some of those key decisions, key dominoes, right, that once you have concurrence, we can have more confidence in a decision that's made and a pathway starts to form. But again, so if we decide 9-12 high school, is that one high school? Is that two smaller high schools? Or is it a high school with potentially a CTE, PC caps kind of feel as an academy, as a choice? Maybe like a Silver Summit concept. Is that something the community would like to consider? So even within 9-12, you still have choices and options that we'll have to flesh out. So lots of work ahead, lots of community conversation ahead.
Yeah. Are there any givens at this point, such as the high school must stay within the city limits?
There are not hard and fast parameters at this point, but I would not be surprised if those don't emerge as part of these community forums and part of these insight, you know, surveys. And as we get more information and those decisions are hammered down, certainly we will share those and make sure we get good feedback on any of that.
Yeah. And when are we going to start seeing how much this is all possibly going to cost?
I am so glad you mentioned that, because I think that's also part of these decision trees and part of these pros and cons. So as we look at these four options, even if we look just at K-8, just at early childhood, just at high school, don't you think we should probably know? It's from the steering committee's guidance, they've said, can we almost look at it at first as, you know, $1 sign to $4 signs, just like we might look at a restaurant or a hotel? And I think that's really a good idea. Don't you? I mean, with option C, let's say option C does rise to the top. 4, 5, 6 K-8 centers, every single school would have to be redesigned, rebuilt, remodeled. That would be a huge expense. So I think sometimes we have to weigh out the pros and cons.
$4 signs is what you're saying.
As well, right. Yeah. That should definitely be one of the features, right?
Yeah. And I guess it's just... there was some expectation, I thought, that we would be further along in the process than we are. Can we wait another year, maybe 18 months, before we start making some of these hard decisions?
I think some of these decisions will start to be made along this pathway. So I think between April and May, right, we will hear this good conversation of the dollar signs, the pros and cons. Maybe an option or two will fall off. And so then we focus more of our energy on the two pathways. Then once we do that, maybe we have a survey question that asks about that 9-12 comprehensive high school, and we get a sense of concurrence around two schools, one school, or a CTE pathway. Once we have some of those things ironed down with the price tags attached to that, I think then we can keep moving. But I do believe it will be a phased approach. I do believe we'll see some low-hanging fruit of things we can do, as you mentioned, with curriculum, with going outside, you know, with doing some of those things, with some furniture, with some things that modernize the environment and space. Then I think maybe you'll see that planning. So it will be a long phased plan.
Yeah. South Summit School District got through their master planning with very similar outcomes with what we're doing here in like 6 months. And, you know, I'm guessing at a little bit less expensive. How come it's taking so much longer here in our district?
I think Park City Board of Education, I think Park City as a community really has an investment, a voice, and an interest, and are engaged. And I think that's fine. You know, I think that's it's good to weigh out and make knowledgeable, reasonable, fiscally responsible decisions for a community. And I think you're in a different mindset when you're in fast growth. You're in a different mindset if you're shrinking. And we have many complex facets. We've got housing development potentially, reimagined spaces and design throughout the community. So I'm okay with taking some time and having some patience. And I realize I think the most important thing, though, is we do have to make some of those decisions and start making small and purposeful, intentional action steps. And I think that will build some excitement and momentum.
So what happens at Tuesday's forum? It's a kind of a rather formal presentation, the way you've got a moderator and then a panel. Why not kind of more of a informal open house?
Right. Well, we've done some informal open houses, and I think those are wonderful for small group dialogue. And I don't doubt that we'll have some additional focus groups after this community forum. But I think the community forum provides us an opportunity to introduce a small panel, including one of the experts that helped develop the plan, and a board member and a staff member, Todd Hauber, who knows the financials and the history of some of this, a board member, community city member liaison. It's good to have people up there going through. We'll go through the four options. We'll go through the pros and cons of those options. We'll start seeing some of those dollar signs just as consideration. And then we will hear kind of town hall style, public comment style. What are some ideas, insights? Have we missed anything? What's an important consideration? We will transcribe. You know, we'll keep all of that information and help to inform our next step. It might help inform the survey question, need for focus groups, need for maybe we'll hear, what if 10 people come and all say, you know, really consider that 912 high school? And we hear that a lot. That helps us with a survey development tool.
Okay. So, again, this is happening 6 o'clock Tuesday at the high school. Are we doing it in the lecture hall? Okay. And then just real quick, while I've got you here, I wanted to ask you about Michael Tanner. He's your new COO. Is that how we're describing his
Chief
position?
Chief Operating Officer, correct.
Yeah. He starts what, this school year?
He actually he is doing transition work for us now. So, yes, he started with some transition time. He has spent 3 days in the district this week. He's actually back in Chicago for the next 2 days at a district management group seminar that I asked him to attend. I said, hey, as long as you're from Chicago and that's going on in Chicago, do you mind? And that's more of an auditing our systems. So he's looking at that to see if that's a strategy or an approach we should take.
Yeah. So what is it? Is he taking a little bit off of other district employees' plates?
Right. So he is going to oversee all of the operational departments of the school district. So Todd Hauber handles all of our financial system, business system. Our chief academic officer handles curriculum, instruction, assessment, professional learning, grants. And then this operations officer oversees all of those services, food service, transportation, community education, human resources. So it is a way to have a point person for things like this master plan. We will have somebody who truly quarterbacks, oversees facilities, will really hammer down this implementation of a master plan.
I was going to say, he's got his work cut out for him then.
It's a big job.
Okay. Again, 6 o'clock at the Park City High School Lecture Hall next Tuesday. If you've got anything to say and learn about the future of our Park City schools, you should be there. Jill, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:34. 8:44 now. Good morning. Well, the Silver Peak chapter of the League of Utah Writers hosting a book signing for author Edward Massey and his new book, Fugitive Sheriff. Ed joins me now on the phone with details. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, so this book signing and presentation will be held when and where?
Friday night at the Camas Library at 6 p.m.
Okay. Fugitive Sheriff is a work of fiction, but my understanding it takes place right here in Summit County?
It does indeed take place in Summit County. There's a series, and they're all in Summit County. It's principally in Colville, but in all of Summit County.
Now, did you grow up here? I mean, why did you choose this location?
No, I grew up in Clearfield, but my mother's family was a pioneer family who settled in Colville, and my grandfather was the Marshal of Colville. So in 2014, I published a book called Every Soul is Free, which was about a sheriff who left his Thanksgiving dinner in 1948 and died and hunted a fugitive who escaped crossing the state line. Fugitive Sheriff is the prequel to that and the father of that sheriff.
Okay. Let's see. So the League of Utah Writers Spring Conference, you'll be talking specifically about turning historical fact into true fiction? Can you talk a little bit about how true does fiction have to be?
Well, it comes from the fact that in the process of getting this book published, the evaluation editor rejected the book once and simply didn't believe it. May I just give you a brief summary on what the plot is?
It's
the fugitive sheriff, because the sheriff's father is killed on the jailhouse steps, and so he pins on his family star and is hunting down the murderer. But at the same time, he is being hunted by U.S. Marshals because he's a polygamous man. And in the process of getting it published, the evaluation editor said, I just don't understand why they couldn't simply set up a watch at the jail and arrest him. And, you know, my thought was, oh, my gosh, you just don't understand. We're dealing in a county that is 180% the size of Delaware. It's called Summit County because it has 39 peaks above 12,000 feet, and a population in the territory that is 90% co-religionist and 10% not. So for every time somebody is out there trying to arrest him at the jail, there are 10 people who are telling him, watch out, watch out. And so this Saturday's presentation is reviewing what amounts to the facts of 19th century life in Utah Territory and how I expressed them in such a way that they could be believed by the editor and believed as fiction. So the concept of true fiction means it's fiction, but you can believe it and live in the story and, you know, appreciate it. For example, one of the deputies was 18 years old. Again, the editor didn't believe that. It was unbelievable. I mean, how could you not believe that people were taking on those responsibilities at that age? I mean, after all, Billy the Kid was pretty young. But the last thing you can do is say to an acquisitions editor, you're wrong. So I had to find a way to persuade them to believe it inside the story.
Okay. Again, you'll be visiting Summit County. You'll be at the Camas Library tomorrow night, 6 o'clock. You'll have a book. So you're doing a little reading as well?
Yes, I am actually going to kind of read through some of the aspects of the story and some of the parts that particularly affect Summit County, and have books as well. And since it's the League of Utah Writers chapter, we'll probably talk a little bit about writing, too.
Okay. Hey, Ken, or Ed, excuse me. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
That's author Ed Massey again. His new book, Fugitive Sheriff, a work of fiction, but taking place right here in Summit County. He'll be at the Camas Services Building there at the Camas Library at 6 o'clock tomorrow. KPCW News Time now, 8:50. Good morning. Well, at its sponsor party last night, the Park City Institute announced this summer's St. Regis Big Stars Bright Nights concert series featuring five acts. In the studio with details, the executive director of the Institute, Terry Orr. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you've got your sponsor back, St. Regis?
Our title sponsor, St. Regis, has never left us, and we are so fortunate that they have understood the waves we've been riding. The same is true of the Browning family from Dallas, Texas, and Dr. Tony Marlin and his wife Renee from Las Vegas. They have all been sponsors with us for over a decade and have been helping us through this difficult, complicated year.
Okay, well, before we get to the acts, let's talk a little bit about the decision to host the summer shows, the venue, the Echo Center, which you know and love, I guess, for many people who have been attending the shows there for 20-some years.
Exactly. We did go way down the road with a group that we hope will still come to fruition, maybe for next summer, of building a new amphitheater somewhere out in the greater Park City area. But it just became, with all of the snows that we had, and had we started the prep work back in the fall instead of talking about starting it in the spring, we might have been able to make something happen. So we looked around at other places, and we realized we have a fabulous venue. We own the stage, the sound, the lights. We have great seats and sight lines, and we have parking. We have parking, gosh, till the cows come home.
Yeah, so there are plenty of venues that operate indoors during the summer. I mean, do you think you can make this work?
Based on the feedback we're getting, we're going to make it work, and we're going to be selling out these shows. You know, the 1,200 seats that we have in the Eccles Center is certainly less than the opportunities we've had outdoors in the summer. So we have fewer seats to sell. And there are a lot of people that like the idea of sitting in a fixed seat and knowing exactly where they're going to be and not having to queue up hours in advance and all of those things. And we think we have a great season plan. So that's, you know, a piece of it as well.
Yeah. So what about ticket prices? Are they, I went online to try and buy them. They're not even on sale?
It goes on sale tomorrow for members and then next Friday to non-members. And the ticket prices are, they are variable to the shows. So in the past, we've done kind of some fixed price across the whole season. And this year, we're just doing it as we always do at Eccles. The front part will be for sponsors. Then there'll be open purchase in the main part of the house. That will be divided within to two price ranges. And the same thing happens in the balcony. The front part of the balcony has one price and the back has another price. But we have a couple of shows that ticket prices start at $29. You know, we really want to make sure that we keep this the community series that people have come to love.
Mm-hmm. Someone was mentioning last night, it's like the National Geographic series that you had this winter was so popular. I mean, is that something you could fit into the summer schedule as well, or is that it's just music?
Right now, it's just music. We are certainly looking at other things, but right now we needed to, you know, throw down our shows for our summer music season. And there's a lot of conversations about other kinds of programming.
Yeah. Since you're there anyway, I guess. So the school district property, of course, forbids alcohol for some. It's a staple during summer shows. So you just have to work around that? Or
we are working with some friends on Kearns Boulevard. And since it's not confirmed, I'm not able to say much more. With creating kind of our own little Club Eccles, and we'll hopefully have a more clever name than that, but a place where you can gather before the show and gather after the show.
Okay. So let's talk about the shows then. It kicks off July 30th with Punch Brothers.
Nope.
I missed it. July 7th with Brothers Osborne.
Brothers Osborne, which, you know, are a great country act. They were on stage with Maren Morris at the CMAs just a few weeks ago. They have plenty of awards of their own. And they are actual brothers, and they are great fun and such talented musicians.
Mo was telling me that they're actually get really engaged on stage. I mean, the little shot that you had of them last night was kind of mild.
It was kind of mild. They are on stage, and they are in the audience. You know, they move around.
Okay. Then July 30th with
Punch Brothers. Which, of course, we had them in 2001 when they were Nickel Creek, and Chris Thiele has done nothing but become this amazing talent and musician. He won the MacArthur Genius Grant for his mandolin work. He is now the host of NPR's Live From Here, which was formerly Garrison Keillor's show. And he's had this group, Punch Brothers, oh gosh, I'd say for at least 8 years now. And we had them at an outdoor venue 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Okay. August 13th, again, another Tuesday night, the Taj Mahal Quartet, Mark Cohen, and the Blind Boys of Alabama all
it's
on the stage.
It's a giant show.
Three acts.
They'll be taking, they won't all be on at the same moment. We've had Taj once in the past. We had Mark Cohen both indoors and outdoors, and we've never been able to make the timing work for Blind Boys. So this came as a package to us from an agent that we've worked with before, and he said, how would you like to have all of them together? And we said, of course.
Yeah. Do you have limitations in terms of when the show can end? I mean, does it have to be over at 10?
It does not. Yeah. So that's another opportunity that we have, is we don't have that hard curfew.
Okay. And then that week, Friday, August 16th, Gone West. This is featuring Kobe Calais.
Yes. So she has formed a new group, and it's with her fiance and her and they're best friends. And Colby Calais, of course, being a big name and a kind of pop star, rock star. And she did something different, I think, 3 years ago, where she did her own acoustical tour. And she decided it was so much fun, she wanted to keep doing it. So this Gone West is her new configuration.
Okay. And let's see. CAM is the final show, August 24th. Who's this?
CAM is, she's a country phenomena. She is about to, I think, have a pretty big breakout at Stagecoach in the next few weeks. Her music is a little bit of, Dolly Parton meets, I don't know, I'm not going to do a good job of that. She is country, but she's also a whole lot of fun and a great musician.
Okay, so again, tickets going on sale tomorrow for members and...
At 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock and then...
At the Eccles Center.
All right, and then a week later for...
General public.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what does it take to be a member if you wanted to get the events?
You know, it's $49 and it gets you to TEDx events. It gets you all kinds of discounts throughout the year. It's really a fairly modest amount to become a supporter of the things that we do all year long.
And in terms of the Institute itself, I mean, what's the status? You had mentioned that a financial committee has been formed to do what?
Well, it's an advisory group, and really most good boards have them anyway. And this is a group that is a committee, really. They're an advisory committee that's focusing just on how do we get from where we were to where we want to be. And we've made great strides, and there's some terrific folks who are helping us get some clarity about the changing business of being in the performing arts.
Yeah. So at this point, are you in good financial shape?
We are in much better financial shape, and we'd love to be in better financial shape still.
Yeah. And do you have the money that you need to put on the summer shows?
You know, it's always a balance between donors and ticket sales, but we do have great sponsorships, and so we're confident in being able to put on the shows and do a great job with it and have the money from ticket sales help us with student outreach. Because, again, this is a community series. That's really what's different about all the places you can see music, is that the people that are in the audience are community members who like being there with each other. We celebrate birthdays and anniversaries. They also know that the money from those ticket sales, in our case, goes to support student outreach, and specifically in the past few years to help us with the TEDx students and the great opportunities they have to give their TED Talks.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, just we really do expect some of these shows, based on the you know, current that we're hearing, to sell out pretty quickly. So if you are a fan, you should be a member and get your tickets right away. And we're looking forward to a great summer.
Okay. Terry, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Terry Orr is the executive director of the Park City Institute.